Hello, and welcome to another episode of Relationship Alive. This is your host, Neil Satin. Way back in episode 13 with Keith Witt, we spoke about the importance of polarity in terms of maintaining a spark with your partner. Have you wondered, though, about what that really means? Does that mean that one of us has to be masculine and the other has to be feminine in order for this whole thing to work? How do you turn polarity into something that doesn't just become a descent into stereotypes, but into a dynamic energy that lives and breathes in your relationship? And how do you take it to the next level, turning it into higher states of energy and consciousness with your partner? Today's guest is Michaela Bohm, an experienced counselor and tantric lineage holder who specializes in teaching skills that enhance deep intimacy and lasting attraction, and who co-taught for a number of years with David Data to make the concepts that he teaches in books like Way of the Superior Man and The Enlightened Sex Manual practical. And in today's episode, we're going to do just that. We'll update your idea of what polarity even means and give you some practical tools to open yourself up to what's possible in terms of your energetic connection within yourself and with your partner. Michaela is also going to point out some of the places where people stumble or get stuck, so that you don't have to make the same mistakes on your journey. She's also kindly offered a free copy of one of the audios from her website to a lucky listener. All you have to do is download the show guide at neilsatin.com/polarity, or text the word passion to the number 33444 and follow the directions to qualify. So much to chat about. Michaela Bohm, thank you so much for being here with us today on Relationship Alive.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Hi. I'm really delighted because, well, for one thing, I really wanted to talk to David Data, but the guy, I guess he doesn't talk to people anymore or something. which is fine. I'm actually really excited to hear from you about how you've seen that work grow and enhance the lives of people who you've been working with. And you were a co-teacher with him for 13 years, right?
For 13 years. And he is truly the pioneer, you know, of this whole realm. I didn't hear your interview with Keith Witt, but I know Keith Witt. And a lot of the things he talks about are directly, out of David's work. And so are many other people, because he was the first one who really, pioneered these concepts. Now, the interesting thing is that, of course, when The Way of the Superior Man was written, I think 15 years ago or something like that, things were very different than they are now. And the terms masculine and feminine were not defined the way they are now. And they weren't used and misused the way they are now. And so, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years in being out and about and teaching, and I traveled and taught with David for the last 13, and I've also been teaching extensively on my own in Europe and the US, and this year also Australia. But we've really gotten a different view on the whole realm of masculine and feminine. So I think it might be interesting to define it a slightly different way than it used to be defined, because things have changed quite dramatically.
So yeah, maybe we can just start there. I'm really curious to hear how the landscape has changed for what we're even talking about with masculine and feminine.
Yeah, I think the landscape has changed culturally, and as well the landscape around the understanding and the use of the terms masculine and feminine has changed. So the first thing to be said about that is that, when these terms first were pioneered, the definitions were created, and then not many people knew about it, and it was always quite a revelation for people when they looked at themselves in those terms. And then over years, when it became somewhat more popular, you know, a lot of misunderstandings have happened. And nowadays, the terms masculine and feminine are part of both, you know, pop psychology and pop culture in a certain way without a lot of distinction and definition around them. And one of the common pitfalls is that people conflate masculine and men and feminine and women. And of course, when you look at it through the lens of, well, women are this and men are this, you're actually stoking both a bit of a gender war and the stereotyping. And that is, you know, a lot of what critics have said about these terms. And that's true if you really assume that women are feminine and men are masculine, which is, of course, not the case. Masculine and feminine are just placeholder terms to describe certain energies that happen in both genders' bodies. And that's a very, very important distinction, which we can go into in a second. And the misunderstanding around that distinction has made, to me personally, I don't even want to use these terms anymore because it's so laden nowadays with all kinds of stereotypes and misconceptions and, you know, also ways to use these terms to just pigeonhole people and box them in certain ways. Yeah. But that's, of course, you know, what happens with any definition that's that becomes popular. So that's one aspect. I don't know if you want to say something about that before I go on a rant on the other aspect.
Well, I think the only thing that I maybe just wanted to contribute here is that, you know, I think I actually became familiar with this concept of masculine and feminine polarity through the work of Tony Robbins, actually. And
who also took it from David.
Yes, it's very clear. You know, you can see it very clearly as you become familiar with David Deida's work. And of course, why wouldn't he? It's so powerful. But what I found is that so it seems like people can get it, or at least they get this notion of, well, okay, whether I'm a man or a woman, I'm going to relate more to more masculine qualities, and we can talk about what those are, or more feminine qualities. And let's say that masculine qualities, just as they're sort of generically defined now, is like, you want to be strong and solid and a container for your wild woman to like lose her orgasmic mind. Then that can almost become this like rigid thing that people feel like they can't deviate from, or like they lose the dynamic aspect of polarity. Yeah. So maybe you could address that as you.
Yeah. Well, that's why I've kind of moved on from a lot of those constructs, and why I, when I can help it, don't define it as masculine and feminine so much anymore, because it's almost become a tool of suppression or oppression. Well, you're not in your feminine right now, or, you know, you just don't meet me with your masculine. You hear this all the time. I'm sure this is not only a West Coast phenomenon. what it is that within each human being, there are those two forces. And so how I've started to define this in my own teaching is that I look at it more like principles, right? So everyone has an organizing principle in them, and everyone has a pleasure principle in them. And so the organizing principle, the principle of the masculine, is the part of each human being that drives things forward, that has direction and structure and ideally clarity and a long-term view, and works in a kind of a time-space grid to essentially create a forward movement. There's a lot more to that, you know, the tendency towards emptiness, emptying out, versus the tendency towards fullness, which is the feminine, you know, pleasure principle aspect of the wild, chaotic swirl of nature as it is expressed in each person's body, right? And in each person's environment and life. And with that, the pleasure in the body and the enjoyment of the multitude of flavors and textures and, you know, capacities. That's the pleasure principle, or the feminine nature, essentially, right? And the organizing principle, consciousness, the kind of depth of penetration and clarity that makes things happen and moves them forward. One without the other, of course, is horrendous, right? The organizing principle without the swirl of chaotic natural life force is just, static. Just stuck, I should say. And only chaos and the creative flow of, nature without direction is a natural disaster, so to speak. Yeah. And so you do need both, even within yourself, because otherwise you are just doing what you want to do and don't get anything done, or you're so rigid that you're no longer able to flow with life.
Right.
And so each human being has a mix of those two that allow us to varying degrees, to be both effective and expressed and fulfilled in life. Now, when it comes to sex, and with sex, I don't only mean intercourse, I also mean in my original, lineage, it was called the erotic friction, right? The tension between those two poles is what makes for that kind of sexual chemistry and excitement and spark that we all want in our intimate relationships, regardless if we're straight or gay. That's why it has nothing to do with masculine, male and female. It has to do with how it sits in your body. So in the sexual interaction, we want that friction, we want that tension, we want that build up and release, the hunt and being, and being the hunted, the penetrator and the person who surrenders. Now, it can go back and forth, and it should go back and forth for the fullness of experience, but most people have a, so to speak, a home energy or home preference, which is the place where they're naturally most relaxed and full and fulfilled. And that's either the masculine or the feminine. And that doesn't mean you don't have all the other aspects, but sexually speaking, what you then learn is to animate and distinguish and define those two aspects of you so you have them available to play with another human being.
Yeah, and then Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if we could just sort of pause right there for a moment and just say, okay, can you offer our listeners, like, here's a way for you to get in touch with the organizing principle within you, and here's a way for you to get in touch with the pleasuring principle within you.
Mm-hmm. Well, an easy way to look at this, if you are in doubt, because some people are in doubt. And the reason people are in doubt is that they somehow think that what they're doing the most is who they are. And if we had no societal or, market restrictions, that would be true, right? If we'd all live in nature in the caves or, the jungles of some beautiful tropical island, then what you would do the most is probably what your essence is. But of course, in modern Western society, everything is geared towards the masculine tendencies. So it is not true that what people do mostly is where the essence sits, because most people who make a living have to animate their masculine very strongly, other than a few professions. And so what you look for is what would make you the most happy. Most people spend most of their days in their masculine, meaning in the aspects of their life that require organization, forward movement, fairly rigid adherence to a schedule and a plan, and need to organize their mind, create structure in their life, make things happen in an organized way. And then with that, of course, comes the tendency to want to recuperate the way that kind of mindset requires, which is essentially be still or sit still or meditate or sit in front of the TV. So that would be the more masculine principles which most men and women adhere by for the sake of making a living and functioning in society. If you go a step below, you will find that your natural tendency when you relax and when you are left to your own devices, let's say on a weekend or in a vacation or in your hobbies, you'll have tendencies. There's people who enjoy the fullness of life, whatever that means to them. That could be anything from children to animals to friends to dinners to preparing food to growing food, to clothing, to social, events, house decorating, doing things that are pleasurable, going to the spa, all of those things that essentially mean engaging with life. If that's how your heart is the happiest, so to speak, if that's how your body is the most relaxed, then you have a feminine essence, so to speak. That also means, certain kind of engagement, an exchange of love, an exchange of information, talking a lot about certain things, engaging fully with things. All of those would fall into the realm of the pleasure principle, so to speak. And when I'm saying pleasure principle, I'm not talking about the shallow pleasure, but the pleasure of being alive in one's body. And then on the other hand, if you have time and space and you could plan a week or a month, however you want to, and you are wanting to meditate, so you get your vacation, and the idea is you want to sit in the desert and look at the vast boulders and do nothing, or you want to climb a mountain, or you want to connect with the ocean through surfing, or you go on a 3-week meditation retreat. You just want to have your mind and your body experience nothing, or you're into extreme sports, or your idea of a vacation is planning your next endeavor, and there's a strong tendency towards emptying out, towards clearing everything away, and towards creating the next challenge or forward motion, your essence is, masculine, the organizing principle. So once you learn that about yourself, you can then learn how do you strengthen those aspects and how do you support those aspects of you so that they're available for relationship and for sexual engagement. And because, of course, the body learns through repetition, the body learns through doing the things that are natively good for you. And so you would then do practices and endeavors and explorations that strengthen the aspects of you that are the most both joyous and applicable to your sexual relating.
I'm curious if I'm listening to us talk and I'm thinking, I think I'm more in the pleasure principle and I think my partner is more in the pleasure principle. Is that going to create problems in terms of polarity in our connection?
It could. Let's see how I guess that. Not necessarily, but you will find that your sexual interaction becomes a much more playful exchange than somebody ravishing and somebody being ravished. Now, mind you, you could be perfectly fine, both of you, all day, both pursuing the realms of the pleasure principle. But when it comes to sex, one of you switches into the more organized role. And in that particular moment, you're properly polarized. Person is the one surrendering, or the one that gets penetrated, the other one is penetrating. One is doing, one is being. These things are only important when it comes to creating an interesting sexual play. But two feminine partners together can still have interesting sexual play. It just has the kind of quality of, you know, in Taoism, they call it water on water. You know, feminine on feminine is like water on water. It's a very specific quality that's that doesn't have a lot of penetrative pinning force to it. But for most people, it's perfectly fine to be in that place all day and then just polarize for the sake of creating a more, erotic friction.
Right. It strikes me that it brings us back to one of the very first things that we were talking about, which is we all probably have both qualities. So if you're able to develop facility on all parts of the spectrum, then you might recognize, like, all right, this is my time to organize, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the second piece of the conversation we started. The reason why I no longer adhere to these principles as strongly is that what's changed very strongly in my interaction with workshop participants and seeing people with each other, and also in my personal work with couples, is that it's no longer true that all men are just wanting to be in their masculine and all women want to be just in their feminine. It's become much more fluid. And even though you might have a masculine essence, you might actually be the more sensitive of the two partners, right? Or because most women nowadays have spent so much time in that organizing principle that and they're so good at it that they haven't paid a lot of attention to the more sensitive aspects, and maybe neither should they.
Yeah, I'm remembering when I read Way of the Superior Man, which was a few years ago, and it actually was a really profound book for me in a lot of ways. But it seemed like part of what he was addressing, when I say he, I mean David Data, was like we had this kind of stereotypical masculine archetype in our Western world anyway, for quite some time. And then we had this countercultural revolution and guys were becoming more in touch with their emotions and at the same time with feminism, women were entering, you know, more involved in the working world. And so there was this sameness that seemed to be what he was addressing, was like that we had maybe come to a cultural place where there were guys who kind of needed to find their masculinity, but not yes. not in a stereotypical way.
Yes.
And or, you know, and I'm speaking in terms of men and women, but this is true for same-sex relationships as well.
Yes. I think we've gone a little bit beyond that now, where most people, particularly, you know, I've been working with people in their mid-20s to mid-30s. This is just not that much of an issue anymore. They weren't raised by feminist mothers, right, the men particularly, and their gender identification is neither one way or the other that strongly, meaning they're not the macho jerks, you know, of their grandfathers or father's generation, or usually grandfathers at that point. And they are also not these softy, floppy guys. They are well versed in both domains, right? They have very strong masculine aspects. And also, they're quite feeling and sensitive and flexible and changing. Like, you know, before we got started on this interview, we were talking about dancing, right? Ecstatic dance or things like that. Well, that would be considered a purely feminine practice. And that would then mean that you would be turning your partner off. But that's not always true, because it can be so fluid that when one of you goes, in a super pleasurable feminine place, the other one might go there too, or the other one might observe it, which is the masculine then, and really enjoy it. And it's not connected to men and women. It's connected to, like you said, having the facility to have it both and then give it to each other for the sake of strong play. And that means I personally think that every woman should, you know, if I had my way, every woman would be completely versatile in animating her masculine really well and animating her feminine really well, and the same with men, so that you have the full range available.
Yeah. And I mean, I could see stuckness being a problem in either respect. You know, you're stuck if you can't have any polarity, but you're also stuck if you can't deviate. You know, that's going to get boring
exactly.
too.
And then you are in this weird place where you have to rigidly pursue something that's not always true. And so the beauty is when you can identify where you are most happy, but you have, you know, fluidity and you're not stuck and you don't suffer from, I have to be this way or else. You know, and that's very freeing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious. I'm fresh off of reading the Enlightened Sex Manual.
Mm.
And good read.
Yes, probably my favorite book of David's.
Yeah, and it relates to some other books I've read. But in general, you know, we've actually talked a lot on this show in some of our earliest episodes about non-ejaculatory sex, and where we're able to go as partners when you're in this dance and it's not about this peak and release. And we've talked about it a little bit from the energetic perspective with Diana Richardson, mm-hmm. whom I mentioned to you earlier before we spoke, mm-hmm. Before we started the interview, in the realm of of Tantra and her brand of Tantra, and we've also talked about it from a biological perspective, what happens in your body when you have that huge peak of dopamine and then crash and what that sets up for you. So I was psyched as I was reading this book, because at first I was like, oh, this is just going to be about like how to have crazy orgasms. But very early on, David Data talks about getting off of the cycle of being addicted to orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
And tuning in to what's happening energetically. So I'm wondering, well, first tell me why it's your favorite book, and because you said that right at the beginning, and that makes me curious. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. also curious to know, like, how does that weave into your own Tantra practice?
So I do agree with you know, the commonly held opinion that the fixation around ejaculation, you know, is questionable and can be very unhealthy, and that of course when you have control over your ejaculation, and that's a small part, right? Seminal retention isn't actually the thing you're after. You are after energetic continence, right, which is the ability to work with your energy and circulate your energy and have cause over your energy way beyond not ejaculating. Because not ejaculating isn't that hard to achieve, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have pleasure in the body or that you are emotionally or psychologically free, right? There's guys and there's also whole schools where it's like, don't come, right? You know, you can't come for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 3 months or whatever. And that can be as obsessive and psychologically damaging than thinking about nothing else but ejaculating. So it's not the ejaculation control that's really important. It's the ability to be energetically continent, which means that you have cause over what's happening in your body around sex, around arousal peaks and troughs and things of that nature. Where I've gone a little bit off the, you know, the prescribed path of not only David, but other people in that field, is that I personally don't think and don't find it useful in my work, in my teachings, and when I work with people one-on-one on this is that when people get too focused on the breath and on the circulation of the breath, they tense their body further and they tense their pelvic floor further, which essentially supports the tension and release pattern of the buildup of the energy. And so there's a lot of people who commit somewhat of a violence against their bodies by forcing these breath patterns and these holds on their body. And there's other schools where it's much more extreme, you know, there's other ways of doing it where you press certain points, you pull up certain ways. And most people are already so tight in their pelvic floors and so tight in that area. And that's, as you know, because you're a man, I'm talking here, you know, about plumbing that isn't mine, so to speak. But, you know, the moment where you kind of go over the edge and where you ejaculate is a moment of extreme tension. So I find it rather counterproductive in many, many people I've worked with to impose more structure and more tension. Now you're tensing the breath and now you're pulling up the pelvic floor. And if you get it technically right, and you can train somebody to get it technically right, it works. And you can learn how to bypass ejaculation that way. And you can learn how to direct your energy up the spine and, you know, feel incredible pleasure. But it usually takes longer. It subjects you to, you know, massive amounts of psychological pitfalls around that. Recently, we've just done a workshop in London, and because my European teaching partner is based there, and so we did a series of sexual yoga instructions in London, and you know, there were people in there where the women now essentially would be incredibly upset if the men even had an ejaculation. And that's of course also a real perversion, because when you look at, for instance, Taoist texts, there's a certain amount that where, you know, of times where ejaculation should happen for all kinds of reasons, and also what kind of foods you eat, how much salt, how much meat, how much exercise you have determine certain things. So these very strong, rigid measures of control on a man's natural process, they can have so many other side effects that the effect that he can now last very long is kind of negated. So all has to be taken with a grain of salt. I personally definitely would want for a man to learn how to be so relaxed and so in control of the aspects of his body that he can bypass ejaculation, have full body pleasure and orgasms. But the control can't be just another way to brutalize oneself. It has to be the gentle, in tune with the body knowledge of the body's energetic patterns and the ability to relax the lower body and you know, direct energy in a relaxed and full way. So it's a dicey subject, to say the least. And there's many different thoughts on that, but
that makes sense to me, and I could see how, you know, you also don't want to create some other cause for disappointment and disconnection.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that's what it's come down to with many people. Not always, and I'm not saying these things as an absolute, but I personally I do teach circular breathing and things like that, but I don't teach it for that sake. I would work and work with couples and work with men, and that's how we do it these days, between, you know, my teaching partner Steve and I, is to work with people and their relaxation and the ability to you know, not brutalize themselves and not force themselves and not to put more dogma and more, oh, I'm not good enough because I can't stop my ejaculations and all of that.
Yeah.
Then from there, you can get a different access to pleasure and a different access to your own sexual function. So the other thing to consider is that, of course, for many, many thousands of years, right, putting control on a human's sexual urges is one of the main ways, of control in society. So to go don't have sex, it's a sin, is not much different than don't ejaculate, it's a spiritual sin. I mean, it's the same kind of idea that can be very dicey in the wrong hands. When you look at it more from a viewpoint of what's the optimal way for your body to be and relax so that you can combine yourself with another human, spiritually, emotionally, physically, sexually, in the optimal way, then that whole endeavor takes on a slightly different angle.
Right. It's not so much like you're trying to get something right.
Exactly.
And missing the point of the whole
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And what you just said made me think too of, you know, there can be all this focus on, you know, the energy, but without the relaxation and really broadening your capacity to experience energy throughout your entire body, then that energy is going to be problematic.
That's right. Yeah.
So, Michaela, I want to take a minute first to let our listeners know that you have generously offered to give one of the recordings from your website, which is michaelabohm.com, to a lucky listener. And the way that you qualify for that recording is to download the show guide at neilsatin.com/polarity. Or you can text the word passion to the number 33444 and download, just follow the instructions there, and that will qualify you for that giveaway. So thank you so much, Michaela, for offering that to a lucky listener. And I'm hoping that in our last few minutes together that we could offer people something practical. Like what's something that you like to give people as a way of really cultivating that openness, the experience of those energetic, ecstatic states? What's something that people can practice, you know, without getting too orthodox about it, but a way to give people some home play?
Well, there's a few things that both men and women can do very easily, regardless of how you identify yourself, both, you know, in your sexual preference and your sexual essence. And one of the things that can't be emphasized enough in this time and age is movement. You know, you and I talked a little bit about it before we started the show, as in the benefits of dancing or contact improv. If nothing else, doing one song a day of movement, of actual pleasurable movement in the body, and shaking the body out and allowing the body to move spontaneously, not in an organized dance way, so not in a I'm going to dance samba or whatever, but in a feeling what the body wants to do and then doing that, is probably one of the most beneficial things any human, man or woman, can do. Most people, you know, sit for long periods of time and don't get to feel their bodies as much as would be good, you know. And most exercise is rather linear and forces, you know, certain habitual patterns as well. So I like to make sure that everyone I work with gets to shake it out at least one a day, you know, one time a day. You know, of course, if you have more time, dance more. But there's very few people who couldn't do a song even while brushing their teeth or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the second piece is, that's then the other side of the spectrum, sitting for 5 minutes a day and doing absolutely nothing. So no meditation technique, no breathing technique, no focusing on anything, but just sitting without, checking your phone or looking around with the eyes closed and just allowing whatever comes up to come up would be a very good practice. So you have both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, there's the organizing emptiness and the pleasuring fullness right there. What about this, the energy piece? Because I don't know, I got to think that most people, when they read the Enlightened Sex Manual, they're reading about these, the light of infinite bliss shooting up their spine and up their partner's spine, and on some level they're like, I want that. I really want to experience that. So, is the circular breathing technique that you were talking about earlier, is that an important part of being able to open up those channels so that someone might actually experience that with their partner?
That's one of the ways, but it's not the most user-friendly way, because most people don't have time to practice that, and most people have restrictions in your body in their bodies that make that a long way to go, right? Because that will take some dedicated practice. But yes, learning how to be with your breath is one way, but like I said, if you put any control on that breath, it's not very likely to happen. A much better first step would be to find ways to delocalize pleasure. So to take the pleasure that's in the genitals and expand it through the body. And because, that's essentially what we're talking about. We're talking about being able to have pleasure and feel pleasure and have pleasure move through the body in much bigger ways than just feeling it on the genitals. And there's many ways to do that without having to practice circular breathing for, 30 minutes or 15 minutes a day. Now, if you have that kind of a dedication, then there's also other things that you can do that hasten that process wildly. But a good first step is to delocalize pleasure from the genitals into other areas of the body.
So, what can you tell me more practically what that would look like?
Well, that would mean, touching other parts of the body while you're sexually engaged. It would mean loosening the body and sensitizing the body in a way that you can feel in not only in other parts of your body, but that you also have more sexual pleasure. So that would mean relaxing the base of the body, feeling, your extremities, loosening up areas that are incredibly tight, loosening the tension in the head and shoulders, bringing the energy down from the head and shoulders into the lower body through movement, through massage, through touch, through body work. When you're in the middle of sexual stimulation, allowing that pleasure to spread through the body, through relaxation and breath and touch and attention. So all the things that can be done without, a big to-do that make you more sensitive to the pleasure that's already always there.
Yeah, one of, I hope it's okay that I'm revealing this. I didn't check in with Chloe first, but one of our favorite things to say to each other is now do that, but relaxed. So it's
Right.
like bringing that attention to each other of like, oh, like that felt amazing. And, but I also felt the tension in you. And what would it be like to relax and to receive in that moment?
And that's not to say that all those techniques described aren't valid and good techniques, right? It's just if you're not living a yogi life with a yogi lifestyle where you're spending most of your day tenderizing and relaxing and your body and making yourself available and open to energy and all of that, then just a breathing technique isn't going to do that for you. It's a you know it It's a much you start at a much different beginning point, which is what you're saying. Relax, actually relax and feel. That's actual intimacy, right? Actual intimacy is feeling what's happening.
Yeah, and that I think tunes you into how that sexual continuum is happening all the time. You don't have to be in, I mean, speaking of delocalizing, sexual pleasure, like it doesn't have to be when you're in bed or on the kitchen table or whatever. It can be when you're simply making a meal together or walking or whatever it is. There's always that capacity to be tuning in to that flow of energy.
Right, exactly.
Well,
and that's the basis of everything that we're talking about before we go to any technique whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, key seems like a key foundational thing. Before we go, what makes that book, The Enlightened Sex Manual, when you said it was your favorite, what is it about that book that calls to you?
To me, it's the least, I don't know how to say that. It's the least dogmatic of all the books. I love Blue Truth as well. Right? I love Blue Truth because it's not dogmatic at all. It's just this beautiful exploration. But the Enlightened Sex Manual to me is a much more alive and kind of evocative book that takes other aspects into account as well.
Well, if you read the book, definitely send your feedback my way, because I want to hear how it's impacting you, and I can pass that along to Michaela as well. And Michaela Bohm, thanks again so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom, and I feel like we're just getting started. There's so much more that we could talk about. I'm wondering if there's anything in particular that you would like to share about the work that you're doing before we go.
I think along the lines of what we've just talked about, this year to me is a year of really offering some actual education and not just an experience of what could be if you're in the right kind of set of circumstances, but giving all the different somatic, the bodily educations that allow you to not only feel more and, feel more sexual pleasure and have more sexual engagement, but also, feel the pleasure of being alive and being in this moment and being in life. So my whole year, all the events I'm doing this year, which can also be found, on the website, but all these events are geared towards providing a very strong somatic education and relaxation. And I'm particularly excited. I'm offering a 6-month program in the US and a 9-month program in Europe and a bunch of 5-day retreats where we can really go all the way through how do you make your body available for those kind of experiences? And by the end of 5 days of relaxing and opening and directing energy, people have some very profound experiences that they can then replicate when they come home. And that's kind of my focus this year, is to give take-home practices and teachings and access to relaxation. That's moving people forth in their ability to be with their bodies and with their partners.
Well, that sounds really, really fun. So I'm definitely going to see what that's all about. Mm-hmm. And I'll make sure that we have links to your website as part of the show guide. So, which, just as a reminder, is at neilsatin.com/polarity. And you can also text the word passion to the number 33444 to get more information. Michaela Bohm, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Relationship Alive. If you like what you've heard and want to make it easier for other people to find out about us, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast and to rate and review us on iTunes. If you have questions or comments or want to continue the conversation, you can always join our Relationship Alive Community Facebook group. And for more information about today's episode, visit us online at neilsatin.com/podcast. Or you can always text the word passion, P-A-S-S-I-O-N, to the number 33444 for more information. Finally, do you have a burning question that you're hoping we can have answered here on Relationship Alive, either for a future or past guest? Let me know and I'll see what I can do. Take care and see you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of Relationship Alive. If you like what you've heard and want to make it easier for other people to find out about us, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast and to rate and review us on iTunes. If you have questions or comments or want to continue the conversation, you can always join our Relationship Alive community Facebook group. And for more information about today's episode, visit us online at neilsatin.com/podcast. Or you can always text the word PASSION, P-A-S-S-I-O-N, to the number 33444 for more information. Finally, do you have a burning question that you're hoping we can have answered here on Relationship Alive, either for a future or past guest? Let me know and I'll see what I can do. Take care. And see you next time.